Welcome to the Dad's Podcast, discussions about dad stuff. I am Dan Pelham, founder of the Solo Dad Movement and host of the Dad's Podcast. Feel free to reach out to me and share your story at thesolodadmovement.com, email thesolodadmovement@outlook.com, Facebook, The Solo Dad Movement, Instagram, the_solo_dad_movement, Twitter, @thesolodadmove1. In this podcast, I will be interviewing dads and men from all walks of life in hopes that maybe someone will hear their story and understand that they are not alone. I want to shift fatherhood from boys don't cry, tough it out, and the disciplinarian to a place of love, empathy, and understanding from men who are willing to share their stories and feelings with others. I really hope you enjoy this journey into what it means to be a dad. All right, welcome to this episode of Dad's Podcast. I'm with Tosh Grebnik. He and I had kids in gymnastics together, and he's a father of three kids. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and where you're from, that would be awesome.
Sure, yeah, my name is Tosh Grebnik. I am originally from Colorado Springs. Grew up there, went to high school there, and then did my undergrad in Boulder, and then commissioned into the Air Force and was active duty for 5 years.
Nice, nice. Now you're married and live in Broomfield?
I do, yes. We moved back for grad school, and so the location we found in Broomfield was a good spot. It's about equidistant between Denver and Boulder, so nice. It really services a lot of jobs there.
Was your dad military?
No, I'm first generation
military. Why was that?
Colorado Springs is a very military dominant town.
Right.
And it's just everywhere, and I always felt kind of this need to serve, and it paid for my college, and it was a great experience.
Nice. How was your upbringing with your parents? Strict, relaxed, dad home, mom home?
My dad was a pastor, my mom was a social worker.
Okay.
So, like, we had no money.
Right?
I mean, no joke, my mom made our clothes. I think, you know, we would go out to eat as a family. There were five of us, three kids. We would go out to eat maybe once or twice a month.
Yeah.
Ever, growing up. And it was a big deal. And it was never like a sit down. You know, it was always somewhere fast. But other than that, we would always eat at home. We lived in a parsonage, which basically means the church owned our house. So we didn't even own the house. You know, people would bring us meals and stuff. So, yeah, I grew up super poor. And it's definitely shaped how I am. I now have kind of a desire to harness security and find the safe, secure path, that type of thing. Because I grew up with nothing.
Right. Yeah. And your kids, do they realize that life existed yet?
No. I don't think they do. I'm not sure they ever will.
Yeah.
Even if they understand it, just like how I understood my dad's background, you'll never really fully comprehend unless you go through it. And,
right.
And it's my hope that they'll never have to go through it. I certainly don't spoil them, but I don't want them to, you know, go through some of the same experiences I did. I mean, I had an older brother, so I you know, the amount of new stuff I got was so few. Everything I got was hand-me-downs.
Right.
You know, the only benefit I had was I was a lefty. So any sports stuff,
was
you know,
new?
I was the only lefty in the family, so they had to get it new, or at least new for me. It was almost always used. But
yeah. How was being raised by a pastor?
You know, there's kind of the old adage, the pastor's kid, where, you know, they're known to rebel. The way I view it is, PKs rebel mostly because the pastor's wife, the family, they just have this certain expectation and they have to be perfect.
Right.
And if they're not perfect in front of the church, then, you know, everyone gets real worried that either the church, you know, that the pastor's family's out of line, or the pastor himself is worried that no one will follow him because he can't keep his own family in line.
Right.
And that breeds a lot of, you know, frustration because they want to confine and control the kids so much. And, you know, my parents were great. They were, you know, strict when it came to things that they felt were important. Things like character, things like, you know, integrity, doing what's right. But they were pretty laid back on a lot of other things, surprisingly.
Yeah.
You know, I could stay out late, but they knew I'd always come back and come back to where I was supposed to be and not do stuff I wasn't supposed to be doing. And,
right.
And, you know, so there was definitely a level of trust and flexibility there. And I enjoyed my childhood, and I feel blessed for what I had, despite no resources.
Right. You raise your kids with the same religious aspects, I suppose, as your parents?
We do.
Yeah.
You know, we have talked about it many times. You know, there are things that we really emphasize, and we really try to focus anything that has to do with character, integrity, and just things that are, you know, going to make them good people. I would much rather they be a good person than the star of the team or the top student or, you know, something like that. So, you know, that's why we talk about, you know, you got to be disciplined on certain things. You got to prioritize what needs to be done. And don't, you know, don't ignore things just because it's easy to ignore them. Be willing to make the tough decision. And that is an ongoing battle.
Right, right. I mean, looking back, you now as an adult can say you believe your dad did what he did out of love. But as a child, was it hard to understand why your parents would do what they did and not have money? Or was that, you know, something? I mean, my parents were never rich, but I never did without.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't really know where that was like. But I don't know as a kid if you see that as just your life. Or is it something you're like, why would you do this if we're not making, you could do so much better things to make more money?
You know, ministry is a very interesting profession. Because if you talk to just about anybody within ministry, they'll tell you that they feel like they've been called into it.
Right.
Which, you know, assuming you accept the call, there's not much of a choice at that point. Right. Right. And so, yes, some pastors make a killing. My dad was never going to be one of those. He thrives on small, intimate relationships.
Right.
And any church with over probably 50 members, he would have struggled.
Yeah.
So we always had a small church, which then results in a small salary. And
right.
I mean, so, but, you know, I never felt like I went without. There were things that I wish I could have had, and my parents really worked to get those for me. Right. But, you know, I never really felt like it was lacking or I was missing out. They were very good about making sure we felt loved and taken care of, and we had fun. And I played, you know, every sport known to man. And,
right.
And loved it.
Was your dad home?
I mean,
when you look back, were you like, oh, he's always at work, or?
Oh, yeah, no, so he was, my dad came from a very broken home where he was a very competitive baseball player and wrestler, and growing up, and he played all through high school, growing up, neither of his parents came to any of his sporting activities. And for him, that was just devastating. And so he basically swore, I'm never going to do that. I'm always going to be there for my kids. So I think I can count on maybe one hand the amount of sporting events. Now, practice is different, obviously.
Right.
But the amount of sporting events I had that my dad missed. And so he was always there. He was always willing. And the joke with him is, as a pastor, you know, we always joked, well, he worked half a day, one day a week.
Right.
You know, and so he, you know, obviously he worked more than that, but he was very flexible in his schedule. And
yeah.
So that was very nice. And then my mom stayed at home, and eventually she stayed at home until my sister, I believe, was in elementary school. And then she started to build a career in social work.
Yeah, nice. Now, what is your occupation, and how often do you say you're home? Like, what's your work-life balance?
I'm an attorney. I work from home. I work remotely.
Oh, nice.
So, it's both good and bad. I am the owner of my own law firm, and I'm pleased to say we're doing well. We've been very blessed, but as the owner, or in this case, I am one of three partners. We're all equal owners. There's always more to do.
Right.
And if I don't make a concerted effort, I'll work probably 15 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
And I found myself doing that for probably 2 months straight and realized, you know, I didn't see my kids. I didn't see my wife. I wasn't, you know, I was home, but I wasn't home.
Right.
And so my wife and I have been working on it, and I have done a lot better job of trying to be home and present and do activities with my boys, even if it's just sit on the couch next to each other and watch a movie.
Right.
You know, I always feel like the, you know, kind of dad comparison where I'll see other dads out there kicking the ball back and forth with their kids or throwing a ball or doing something. And I always feel like I should be doing that more, but you know, I feel like we have good kids. We wrestle, we play and,
right. You try to make it to all their sporting events?
I do. Yeah. I do a pretty good job of making it to just about all of them.
Yeah.
I've missed one or two typically for work trips.
Yeah.
But I really try to be there for all of them.
That's awesome. And as far as their future, like, I mean, obviously you say you want to be good people and to be happy, but is college something that you're going to push on your kids? Is, you know, like, what do you look for when you look at their future and say, if it was up to me, this is how it would work out?
Yeah, a college degree is not in question. Today's world, the college degree is the high school diploma of old.
Right.
Right. It used to be everyone get your high school diploma and then you can find a job from there. And great if you get a college degree, it sets you up a little bit. Now, if you don't have a college degree, you're in a really bad spot. Even jobs that have nothing to do with a college degree, right. They put on there that you need a college degree. And so for those people who don't, even if they were qualified in every other way, they're not even going to get through the door. And so for me, the college degree is no question. They will all get a college degree. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. What degree and from where, that's where all the flexibility is, right? I mean, you know, there's community colleges, there's vocational colleges, and then there's Ivy Leagues. You know, you have a whole spectrum. And,
right.
You know, I mean, goodness, if one of them gets into an Ivy League school, I'm not sure we'll be able to pay any, you know,
right.
any of it. But, man, I want to sure figure out a way for them to be able to pay $75,000 a year to, you know, go to Yale
right.
or something.
Right.
So,
And is you know, that your plan to help pay for all your kids' college? I mean, obviously being a plan, you know, you've got a few years to get there, but
yeah.
I'm just asking, do you look at the debt side of it? Do you say, okay, you get out of college after 4 years and you still don't know what you want to do. Well, now you got $80,000 in debt, you know, that you got to pay off.
Yeah. So I did Air Force ROTC. I came out of undergrad with no debt,
okay.
which was a very nice blessing. Conversely, I paid my own way through law school. And came out of there with almost $100,000 in debt.
Right.
And just 2 months ago, I just paid it off.
Nice. And how long ago was that?
So I graduated in 13. Here we are in 19. So it was a solid 6 years right. for me to pay that off.
Right.
Which,
But you knew going into law school, that's what you wanted to do also.
It is. And I follow the Dave Ramsey teachings.
Okay.
Where he absolutely has you, in terms of a financial approach, prioritize paying down debt
right.
as opposed to, you know, investing or building up assets. And so for me, we really were disciplined and worked hard to pay down our debt. So we don't owe on our vehicles. We don't owe on student loans. We don't owe on credit cards. The only debt we have is our house. And
nice.
and we have worked very hard at that. You know, we have friends who are taking trips and buying nice cars
right.
and,
right.
you know, my car is almost 20 years old and,
right.
you know, so, and it's got like 240,000 miles. I mean, that thing, I keep expecting it to die at any one point, but while it's still going, I'm going to drive it.
Right.
It works for me. The seat's all torn up. My wife just kind of rolls her eyes. side note here, have you heard of the ancestry search, the 23andMe?
Right.
So I have kidney disease and we weren't sure if this was genetic. So I took it to see if it, you know, showed any sort of predetermined likelihood that I would have it and if it would be genetic.
Right.
And it came back that I am 24% Ashkenazi Jew.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my dad knows almost nothing about his family. My mom right. took the test, the 23andMe. She had no Jewish in her blood. So clearly that means I got it all from my dad. That means my dad was almost 50%, which means one of his parents was almost 100%
right.
Jew. And so now whenever I make a financial decision that's stingy or cheap, I'm like,
right,
I'm
right.
sorry, but my Jew is showing.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, so
right.
anyway, yeah, I've always been very conservative. And as I said, you know, I think that some of that stems just from not having a lot as a kid. And I've always
right.
valued, you know, conservative spending right. and conserving my money, that type of thing.
Cool. As far as your kids' life choices, I mean, being from a religious background, if they chose to be gay or transgender or anything like that, like, how does that come across based on your religion and your moral beliefs and your moral compass?
Yeah.
You know.
And that's a tough one.
It is.
You can kind of talk in the abstract about stuff like that. Right. But man, is it different when it's your kid.
Right.
You know, and you know, I heard a guy, he'll have a radio show and he'll say something that says, standards on the macro, compassion on the micro. So, you know, it's like, I'm not homosexual. I actually disagree with it in some ways, but that doesn't mean I'm going to begrudge everyone out there that's doing it. Right. I have actually plenty of gay friends, right, and I love them dearly, and I have compassion for them, and I really am a big fan of each of those individual people. But I personally would probably struggle if one of my boys,
right,
you know, went down that path. And my wife and I have talked about it, yeah, and it's something that I would have to become, you know, okay with, because it's not worth destroying my boys in the relationship to push a principle.
Right.
You know, I'm a firm believer that it's nurture over nature.
Right.
But when it gets to a point, by the time you're an adult, where you feel you're either choosing or you have no choice, but that's how you view things, I think it has become nature. In other words,
right,
the point to change it from nurture has already happened,
right,
and that they're already on that path.
Right.
And so at that point, it's not like, you know, you tell them, oh, well, you know, make a different choice. It's like whatever happened in their past, I think, is done and gone, and you just accept, right, them for how they are. So
yeah,
that's how I view it.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've been struggling with myself, like understanding that my kid's journey is not mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He wanted to bleach his hair. He wanted to pierce his ears. He wants to do all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, and a friend of mine was like, man, it's not your journey. Like, why don't you just let your kid be your kid? Like, let him do what he's going to do. And I'm like, well, you know, you're right. 100%. Like,
yeah,
it's not. If he wants to look like a goofball, I guess, then go ahead. But I can remember my dad wouldn't take me places
because, yeah,
I had my ear pierced.
Mm.
We're not going. You can either take that out of your head or you're not going.
Wow.
And I would miss, like, family dinners and family functions because he wouldn't be seen in public with his son having an earring in his head.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, to that regard, I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to be that. You know, I, yeah, don't want to give that to my kid and be like, dude, you're going to be excluded because you're different, you know.
Yeah.
So, but, again, like, I mean, I was raised, my parents were very Catholic. They were raised strictly Catholic, like,
yeah,
beyond church, you know, beyond what I would think is deemed even Catholic now.
Yeah.
I quit going to church at 10 years old, 10 or 11, and I just, I didn't understand it, for one, and for two, it was very much forced.
Yeah.
Like, you will dress up, you will go to church, you will sit here, and you will be quiet for 3 or 4 or 5 hours, however long this mass takes.
Yeah.
You know, I've not raised my kid with religion. We've talked about it, he understands. I'm like, there's 4,000 religions. You can pick whichever one suits your lifestyle the best, like, but I want you to look at everything and not just be like, this is what I was told, so this is what's right and this is what's wrong, you know. So I think that's a different aspect from you to I, you know. But I mean, I know your kids are good kids, you know, but yeah, it's just one of those things. I just, whoa, oh, nice. Sorry, this kid almost wrecked his bike right in front of our car.
He saved it, though.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say would be the biggest difference in their upbringing compared to yours? I mean, obviously the financial part, you know, but, like, I mean, with the internet, do you monitor the internet with your kids? Do they have some freedom to that?
Well, let me pause on that for just a second.
Sure.
Your comment about, you know, evaluating what works for you, you know, I feel that that is a big purpose of college. I think college has become all but pointless. They no longer teach you outside of the hard sciences, like, right, in engineering or you know, like a real
accounting
specific degree, right? You don't really learn what you're actually going to do in your job. You learn kind of general principles, and then you get taught your job when you get on site. So really, the purpose of college no longer becomes training for your job or knowledge for your job, it becomes checking the box, as we talked about earlier. You have to have the college degree. And then it also, in my opinion, is the chance for the kid to mature in a somewhat low-risk environment.
Right.
Right. And so for me, that was when I got to college. You know, I grew up in a religious family. I grew up in a military town. And I went to school in Boulder. And Boulder is just, you know, as far left-leaning politically as you can get. And so, you know, when I got there, I had teachers talking about, you know, political policy and how, you know, President Bush can't keep control of his budget and how that's macroeconomics and that's on the exam.
Right.
You know, and I distinctly remember one of the questions was President Bush could not control his budget. You know, and regardless if you agree with that or not, that should not be how it's taught. But my point here is that I got to evaluate every belief, every question I had. Some of them changed, some of them refined, some of them solidified. But, you know, that is, I think, the other purpose of college. So what I want to do is I want to give them the tools so that when they get to that point of kind of self-discovery and self-evaluation, they can say, you know what, I really like what my parents said about this. I don't like what they did about that, but generally they'll still stay on the same path I put them on, right?
Right.
Good people, honest people, hardworking, do the right thing, you know, godly people. That's how I, you know, really want, that's what I want for them, and that's what I try to do. And I'm not always the best dad. I get frustrated, I think, like everyone else does, you know, and you yell and then you feel bad. And but you know, that's anyway, that's what I try to do. You had asked a question. I don't remember what it was now.
Oh, just the difference between their upbringing, you know, with the internet.
Oh,
they have, you know, open control of that? Do you guys monitor that? How does that work in your house? You know, I mean, it's a huge difference in our upbringing compared to theirs.
Oh, drastically different. I remember it was a big deal to get the internet in general, and it was the AOL dial-up, you know, bing, bing, chong. And, you know, now it's just the tip of your finger.
Right.
And I actually had to have someone teach me Instagram so that I could learn it so that before my boys got into it, because I just have never done it and didn't. Oh, not Instagram, Snapchat.
Oh, right.
Snapchat. And it shows you how hip I am. And and so anyway, we have some policies in place that, you know, we know they're going to see stuff they shouldn't. We know they're going to be exposed to stuff they shouldn't. But we want to prolong that as long as possible.
Right.
So no electronics in their rooms after 8. You know, no doors closed with electronics in your room. You know, things like that, you know, we really try to enforce. And then, obviously, knowing your own kids, one of them, you know, pushes limits more than others. So you can kind of give a little more leeway to others. But, you know, that's kind of... that's kind of how we handle the electronics. It's not perfect. I know that, you know, there's all those great anecdotal stories about giving, you know, like chores, and when they finish the chores, then you give them the Wi-Fi password and you change it daily, you know.
Right.
But anyway, so that's kind of where we are in electronics.
Nice.
And we do in the summers, we do no screens until 1 p.m. every day. And then in the school year, you can do screens during the week because, you know, they're at school most of the day. But we do no screens on Sundays.
Nice.
So we try to have some
balance,
you know,
and
screen
control.
Balance, if you will.
Right.
It's hard. It's such a prevalent part of today's society.
Right. Well, and I mean, they're probably going to be raised by the time they get to college. That will be it.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be on a screen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether you even go to your class and see a teacher at that point will be questionable.
Yeah.
You know? So, now, like, as far as, I mean, your upbringing compared to theirs, you know, you look back and you say, we didn't have much. I had hand-me-down clothes. When they look back, what do you think they're going to look at? Hopefully, you know, both the positive and the negative, you know? Like, are they going to look back and be like, oh, I wish my dad was home more. I wish my mom was home more. Like, you know, I mean, and it's hard to say, but from a dad's perspective, what do you think, you know, where do you think, oh, I should do better at this? Or maybe, you know, this is what my dad did that I'm not doing, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I think the world of my wife, and I think she is just the absolute best wife and parent I could ask for me and for my kids. And so I think they will look back and just have nothing but fond thoughts and memories of her and their childhood. For me, I've always been stricter with them. I've always gotten more frustrated in a shorter amount of time with them. I expect a lot more from them. It's not always fair that I do. I hope they can look back and think that I'm doing what's best for them. I fear that they'll look back and think that I was too strict or that I worked too much.
Right.
So I try to work on those things, and I talk to my wife about it and how I can make it better and how, you know, it was one of the things that I had to learn a couple years ago was the value of apologizing to your kid.
Right.
You know, and it kind of dawned on me, I my parents never apologized to me.
Right, no. I don't think that was... I think that's just predispositioned from the time or how they were raised or what
just
it was.
Just didn't happen.
But yeah, no. Absolutely not. And I going through the same stuff with my kid, like, lose it. And you're like, all right, dude, sorry, that was not you.
I know.
That was my work and my life and everything else outside of this. And you just happened to be here, you know. But I talked to another guy, you know, who said it was an amazing concept. She's like, you know, you get up and you get dressed every day. You wear a nice suit. You go to work, put on a smile. You pretend like everything's good out in the real world. He's like, and you bring home the worst part of you.
Hmm.
And he's like, and I think it's time that we try and change that.
Hmm.
You know, you bring home the best part of you because that's what they deserve. The thing is, and kids do it too, is you feel safe.
So you let
and
down.
You know,
if
I lose my shit, they're still going to love me tomorrow. Same with your kids. They have a bad day and they throw a temper tantrum or they break something. They know they're going to get in trouble, but they also know that, okay, you're still going to love me, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was an amazing concept that, you know, I didn't grasp fully because, you do. You come home and give your family the worst sometimes.
No, you're right.
You know, and that's something I really want to work on, and, you know, it sounds like you are too. And the other thing is, I think, like you said, you know, our parents didn't apologize.
Yeah.
But it was very much how they were raised, and that's part of why I'm doing this, is to get rid of that stigma of being a dad. The disciplinarian, I gotta be
the
strict and in charge.
Unemotional.
And, right,
You know.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you gotta be raised this way, and you gotta be tough, and you don't cry, and... That kind of stuff, like, I think needs to go away, but I think it's so ingrained in the male genetics that it's hard because you are the disciplinarian.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that's the majority of men are the disciplinarian in the relationship.
Oh, yeah. No,
just by genetic disposition.
And it's just, it's tough because, you know, at least for me, my wife doesn't work or she works part time.
Right. Right.
And but realistically, the provider of the family financially is me.
Right.
Right. So I feel immense pressure to work really hard and work a lot and provide, you know, and like I get worried that, you know, I'll lose the job and all of a sudden, what am I going to do?
Right.
You know, and so that's definitely something that I've worried about for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, back to the apologizing for your kids, you said you're working on that. And it's something that I do think as dads, we need to take into consideration, you know, because it is. And I think it's still to this day. A lot of times you get mad at your kids, you walk away and you feel horrible.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't turn around and say a damn thing to them. Yeah. You know, you're just like, oh, well, that sucked. I probably shouldn't have lost my shit on my kid.
it is humbling to such an extent when you say, you know what, kiddo? I was wrong.
Right.
I handled this poorly. You know, you did fine here, here, and here. This was the only thing that bothered me. I'm sorry I overreacted.
Yeah.
I know it was an accident. You know, and so...
Right.
But
But I think it's teaching them the same thing to continue on with their kids. You know what I mean? Where we weren't taught that. We were just like, okay, screwed up. Dad's pissed. I'm grounded. You know?
Yep.
And that was it. Like, you went to your mom and we're like, Mom, how long am I grounded? Like,
help!
Yeah, you know? Like, I don't want to talk to Dad. How long am I grounded?
I mean, it was always, wait till your father gets home.
Right. Absolutely.
You know?
I can remember that being told to me as a kid.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but just wait till your dad gets home.
Yeah.
Oh, great. You know? And that was probably the worst. However long that anticipation was till your dad got home was far worse.
Yeah.
You know, but your dad, it would depend on how he got home.
Exactly.
If he had a good day at work, you just got a little rash.
Hey, all right,
yeah,
kiddo,
right.
You need to listen to mom better.
Right. But if he had a bad day,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And there wasn't, like we said, there wasn't an apology for that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you screwed up. That's how it is. Deal with it. That's life. You know? And like with my dad, I mean, we never had human contact.
Mm.
I can tell you that he never said I love you to me once. He told it to my sisters all the time. It was just something that I think he believed was assumed. You know what I mean? Oh, you know. I'm here. I'm your dad. You know.
That's tough.
You know, we're men. We don't need to express our emotions like that, you know? And his brother still, I mean, the same way. Like, I've tried to get his brother to sit down and talk to me. He's like, hey, no. Like, I have nothing to say. Like, what do you want to know about being a dad? You're a dad. Figure it out. You know, I mean, and that's just their generation.
It really is.
To some degree, you know?
And there are all these moms and mom, you know, networks and forums where they talk about, hey, I'm trying to figure out this, I'm trying to do that. And they are just, you know, really helpful to each other. Whereas, you know, I feel like there's just not that for dads.
For dads, right. Absolutely. And women can go out, too. Group of five girls can go out and have dinner and sit around and just bitch about everything that goes wrong in their life.
Well, and they don't even just complain. They actually talk it through, though.
Right. They figure it out and say, okay, you know, this is what's going on. How do we move forward? Blah, blah, blah. Where men, we're like, oh, football game's on. Cool. Yeah. Want a beer? Sure.
Cool. Did you see that play?
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, there isn't any real emotion. And, you know, and that's what I'm trying to get out of this is somewhere where people can understand that, yes, everyone feels these emotions. And I want to hopefully find a place where it is okay to say, dude, I'm struggling as a dad. Like, this is hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I do it by myself with one kid.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Like, three kids, you know, and then you have your wife and, you know,
so
all
different.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's just completely different and everyone's story is different, but I'd like to get out there and get them all so that we can share them and just like this, people know what's going on.
Yeah.
So, I appreciate your time, Tosh. Thanks for the interview. And have a good day.
Thanks,
hug your kids. Tell them you love them.
Will do.